Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
I believe we can say good morning to Andy Mitten. Good morning, Andy.
You can say good morning. How are you doing?
That's enough filibustering from me for one morning. Thanks a million for taking the time to join us this morning, Andy from United We Stand. Of course, there's plenty to get into, Andy, and I know that people who follow you on Twitter will have seen your thoughts after the game last weekend. There's obviously a temptation at when you see a game like that to sort of reach for the existential crisis button. But I did wonder in your own thoughts on it whether this was just a bit of a blip, there's a bit of rustiness, or it does represent a significant step back for this United setup.
It was only one game, but it was a horrendous game. It was a horrendous result. It was the third time in as many seasons that Crystal Palace left Old Trafford with points. And slightly odd, because when United play at Selhurst Park, they almost always win. But it came at the end of a week where it was pretty much a perfect storm against Manchester United. The frustration from fans about the lack of activity in the transfer market continued to build. Combine that with Liverpool signing a world-class midfielder from Bayern Munich, and Thiago Alcantara, Tottenham signing Gareth Bale and a player who'd been linked with Manchester United. Then you add the Swiss Ramble, who's a respected financial football blogger, doing a piece which was pretty damning against Manchester United. And then you saw the performance. So I think there's a lot of anger after that, combined with the fact that last season finished on a slightly disappointing note. United didn't win any trophies, faded towards the end. I think people assumed that the club would go out and strengthen. And Donny van de Beek's come in, but there was one point where United were the only club in the Premier League who'd not signed a single player. And in March, Ole Gunnar said he needed two or three players. So fans are asking, why aren't they coming in? Now, there's a bit of mitigation here. The reaction online is often completely disproportionate and hysterical. And I've written a piece today where you wonder, how would Sir Alex Ferguson have got through those first 3 years when he was building? How would United have survived in the summer of 95 when Paul Ince, Andrei Kanchelskis and Mark Hughes, pre-established first team, has left the club and only one reserve goalkeeper was brought in? But social media now, it is a factor, and it drives United mad when they're linked to club, to players who they've got no interest in. Or maybe an agent will link their client to United, does no harm for him to be linked to Manchester United, but there's absolutely no truth into it. But the bottom line is there's frustration with the club's recruitment. It's not a one-off, this. This has been happening in the post-Ferguson years. United have often left it too late, and then a team sort of panic buy, overpaying for the likes of Marouane Fellaini, Harry Maguire, who's been a decent signing, but he cost the most expensive defender in the world. Is he the best defender in the world? That's another question. So this was all building, and then to see Palace start so well. I saw an interview with one of the players who said he wanted to catch United cold, and they did do. And it just knocks the confidence. That said, I wrote the cover story for the new 442 magazine, and it's an optimistic one. I spoke to loads of people behind the scenes at the club to find out what they're doing, about the improvements on the youth side, about the recruitment process. They want it to be more considered. They want to stop making the mistakes that United have made in recent years. But when you write an optimistic piece, and it's a big 4,000-word piece, it just jarred with the mood of last weekend following that that defeat to Crystal Palace.
It's interesting thinking about the social media element, Andy, because there was that ESPN piece last week, where their sources said that the club were frustrated, surprised about posts online about fans suggesting United missed out on Bale and Reguilón. And in the same piece, I quoted Richard Arnold from February saying that Ighalo was a top trend on Twitter when he signed, and claiming that this as a victory. So which way do Manchester United want it? Do they want to be the most socially media recognised club in the world, or do they want their fans to shut up? Because they can't have both.
They can't have it both ways. I've been at a web summit, which is organised by an Irish lad in Lisbon, where Richard Arnold was there, and he had a PowerPoint presentation where he spoke about the interactions when players are linked to Manchester United. And the club actually used this to get Paul Pogba, because he wanted to go to Madrid in 2016. And United said, look, when you were linked with Madrid, there was this number of transactions, interactions, whatever you call them. When you were linked with Man United, there were 6, 7, 8 times as many. And also, if you go to Madrid, you'll be the fourth or fifth man there. If you come to Man United, you'll be the main man. We'll build the team around you. So when United are caught in sponsors, which they do very successfully, and they're still a trailblazer commercially, they use these statistics. But they've created a rod for their own back, because they've appealed to a new global fan base. And it's the same for all the super clubs. You know, Barca have got fans who started watching Barca when they were winning everything, and they think that's the norm. And United have got fans who think that United should be winning the league every single year. And when that doesn't happen, or when United were as poor as they were at times last season, quite rightly, they get annoyed with that. But the transfer stuff, it is madness. It's absolute madness. And what did a club do about it? Because somebody said to me, why don't they just deny it? Why don't they just deny the link to a player? Okay, so what happens when they actually do want a player and they don't deny it? They lie. Then everyone's going to jump on it even more. So stories with Manchester United, they do so well online that you get... it's frustrating in some ways, because I remember going to... As a journalist, it's frustrating. Going to Belgrade, doing a big piece behind the scenes of the Belgrade derby. It took me 6 months to set up. Proper journalism, heavy, heavy stuff. And yeah, I did all right. But I spoke to someone in Madrid for 10 minutes and did a piece, and it got 20 times as many hits. So what's my editor going to tell me next time? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we love your long reads where you go and interview people and you dig out sources and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, just do as a piece on, you know, I wouldn't say speculative transfer story, because I've got proper sources. But that just shows, you know, I saw last night United are definitely doing this bid for Sancho next week. And I thought, well, that's news to me. And you have this obsession of like, is this journalist reliable? Is that journalist reliable? And I do stuff myself where it's dangerous for journalism, because people will read something they agree with and you're the best writer ever. And if they disagree with it, you're the worst writer ever. And how on earth are you making a living out of journalism? Now, my job should be to tell the truth, not to say that if United are not signing a player and I say that, that might not be what you want to hear, but that doesn't make me bad at my job. Doing the job, yeah. I did it with one player earlier in the season and spoke to four different sources to say this is just not true. And then I got 7 hours abuse online. But it wasn't true. Didn't happen. And you know, I can handle it. I've done it for a long, long time. It also is completely different to the real life world. You go to the matches, and if you meet, it's fine. And online, you just get this anonymous fury at times when Manchester United lose matches. I don't pick the team, you know.
There does seem to be this sometimes comical world that particularly exists on social media, where insider journalists are held up as the Richard Arnolds themselves. Like, I mean, through no fault of their own, obviously. Like, I mean, Arsenal fans have a particular soft spot for David Ornstein of The Athletic, for example. And whenever a deal gets done, he gets the credit. You know, like, I mean, it's a very strange subculture of the online world, which is boomed and exploded into something that you can't avoid now.
It's mental. And you mentioned David Ornstein, who did very well, and he's good, and he works hard, and he's got good contacts. And when he personally wasn't sacking Unai Emery from Arsenal, he got absolutely slaughtered. And he's like, this is a job to report on events. yeah, but you must know, you know, why has it not happened? Why has it not happened? There's so much frustration there. And there's some complete blackers out there. Absolute blackers. Never been seen in a press box in their lives, at a press conference, and cultivated an image as being, you know, transfer in insiders. And then you've got another subculture of the European transfer chasers. Some of them work very hard and they speak to lots of agents and they get good stories, but there's this addiction to transfers. We had a cartoon in United We Stand last month called The Transfer Junkie, and it's a guy sat in his bedroom going absolutely mental because United have not signed the six players that he wanted to sign on the first day the transfer window opened. And obviously it's a joke, but there's some truth in it. It's like, I can't wait for this window to close. I don't like it. As a journalist, I do not like the transfer window.
Yeah,
But I really need to buy players.
Seems to have gone a bit mad all right recently. And I think that the sort of global swing to an intolerance of other people's opinion has somehow found its way into sport now as well. And as you say, there's, things have taken a bit of a weird tilt over the last few months. Speaking of a bit of a weird tilt, just on the pitch, Andy, then. So, like, there is a difficulty reading too much into the Palace game, as you identified, but it's the only real evidence that we have to hand. So let's run with that for the minute. Like, United look bang average in so many respects, and whether it is down to rustiness or a deeper problem, we won't know until future games. But one thing we do know is that Paul Pogba is obviously coming under competition now from Donny van de Beek, and it was interesting to see what his reaction would be then to getting selected against Palace and to whether he would respond positively. That body of evidence is not that encouraging for United fans.
Well, Pogba was one of many who had a poor game. Lost the ball too easily. And along with Bruno Fernandes, one of the world-class United players who you expect to change a game, failed to do so. It's a big season this for Pogba now. He's not injured. If we'd been speaking at the start of this year, I think most United fans expected him to leave. Probably wasn't a huge list of suitors for him, even pre-COVID. And United were under no intention to sell him. His view as being an enigma at the club. He just needs to be more consistent because he's clearly very talented. But United need to see this on a consistent basis. Yeah, Palace was poor. We could judge a little bit on Luton, but that was a weaker team. But you saw the three substitutes coming on with 13 minutes to play. Fernandes, Rashford, Greenwood brought a pace which had been lacking in the side. I think you've got a case that because of a lack of pre-season, every player needs minutes. I speak to professional footballers all the time. I'm not just a blagger who makes things up, and they say it takes weeks to get into a season for your fitness levels to be high. But it's the same for every club. Now, Palace did have a load of matches, and United were still playing into August in the Europa League as well. But if you look at the starting 11 for United against Palace, you'd still expect them to win. But then you see, well, Fosu Mensah started on the right-hand side. Dan James, who fell away completely throughout last season after a bright start. Don't fill you with conviction. Odion Ighalo had a really poor game at Luton. He's going to go back in off his loan in January. And he was doing really well before lockdown. So you wonder whether there's a case for another striker. I worry if United get some injuries because I think the strongest 11 is actually decent. But you can't play the strongest 11 all the time. And you've got Champions League football this year. It's much harder than Europa League. Europa League last year, you could play Greenwood and Brandon Williams, teenagers. You can put them in at Partizan Belgrade away. And it's a great experience for them to play in a hostile environment against a team which is significantly weaker on a technical level. You can't do that against teams in the Champions League because you'll lose the match. And United can't afford to lose the matches. So you need a stronger squad. And they want to strengthen the squad, but another struggle is getting rid of players, moving players on. They're paid too much. There's no list of suitors for them. Madrid and Barca are almost having fire sales because of the financial impacts of COVID and bringing money in. It's much harder for Manchester United to do that because the players Madrid and Barca are selling have won league titles. They've won European Cups. The ones Man United have got don't quite have the same trophy cabinet.
Yeah, just one other one on that sort of Pogba Van de Beek dynamic. Like it will be interesting to see how it pans out. And as I said, who knows on the basis of that one game. But like, and Van de Beek, by the way, does not seem like a player who suffers from a lack of confidence. But at the same time, he's made a monster move for him. Like the move of a career, and he comes into a team that when you look around at maybe Pogba, Fernandes, obviously on the basis of last season, you would expect Maguire, and obviously there are things going off the pitch there that might be impacting him too, and De Gea and those sort of leaders, and suddenly they're not living up to the hype almost, and Van de Beek comes off the bench and he's the one that's got the spark. Like it's as I said, he's not lacking in confidence, but it is a difficult dynamic for a youngish player coming in there and suddenly everybody's looking at him to be the spark.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, I was warned not to get too carried away and let him have time to adjust to English football. And I spoke to a lot of people about him. I spoke to Stephen Pienaar, his coach at Ajax, but who knew Donny and had watched him come through. And he just said, you know, don't expect him to have the impact that Bruno Fernandes made, because he's not at that stage in his career. Clearly he's played Champions League football, but to go from the only country you've played in straight into the Premier League is a difficult jump. And yeah, he's had a decent enough first week. I thought his movement off the ball was good at Luton. We didn't touch the ball enough though, and he scored the goal on his debut. But you know, we've got to be careful of Dan James syndrome here. He had a great August last year and then didn't score another goal until I think Lask away before the lockdown. So I mean, every United fan welcomed Donny van de Beek, but you know, he's not Thiago. He's not a proven player just yet. And be patient with him. And if he has a good season, great. But I also think that he's not viewed as a Jadon Sancho class player to come in and be the main man. If he didn't start at Brighton tomorrow, I wouldn't be surprised. But clearly if he plays his way into the team, then that's what he'll do. But such is the number of games. I know that Ole Gunnar wants to utilise all his midfielders and feel that, you know, if Fernandes, maybe Fernandes is not the best example because he's the best player. If one doesn't start at home to a Crystal Palace level team, then Van de Beek can come in. But I realise I'm contradicting myself saying that, because United often struggle against the weaker teams to get the results and are actually better against the best teams.
You mentioned Sancho there, and I guess there's a video that runs the other night after the Luton game of fans beside the team bus saying, "What do we want, Sancho?" And on the chant went, like, there's clearly an envy amongst Manchester United fans at the moment about what other clubs have done spending-wise despite the coronavirus pandemic. What's your gut feeling on how business is going to be done for Manchester United over the next month?
In fairness to United, they would argue that their net spend is higher than any club in the last three transfer windows. United have spent, they've just spent badly. Not in the last three transfer windows, but in the last 7 years. And struggled to get big money in for players. They did that for Romelu Lukaku. They tried to get better money in for Chris Smalling. I know the club still wants to strengthen in this transfer window. Jadon Sancho has been the main target for United, to the point that other agents who want to put their players into the club, United have not even been getting back to them, and they feel that United are just going all out for Sancho. I've maintained for a long time that I cannot see United paying 120 million for Jadon Sancho in this COVID environment. And then you have Dortmund, who don't need the money like they did do 15 years ago when they were about to go under. So there's an impasse which has not been broken, and maybe the player needs to say, "I want to leave." And then a club doesn't want a player who wants to leave. I don't know how strong his desire is to leave, whether he'll force the move, because that can get ugly. Players have done it in the past. And I spoke to a former United player this week who played many years at the club and knows all about transfers. And he opined that the United have lost the ability to do the dark arts of transfer in the Ferguson days. And Fergie made some errors as well in the transfer market, because it's not an exact science. A potential player would know exactly where United wanted to play him, who he was going to play with. He'd been mesmerised, he'd been hooked, he loved the idea of it. And then he went to his agent and said, "I want to leave, I want to go. And you know, if you're Tottenham and you've got Dimitar Berbatov and you know he wants to go to Man United, it makes it much more difficult to keep him. You can try, you can go for your brinkmanship, but Fergie was good at the dark arts, and then he was Ferguson. I know Ollie does try and do a lot of talks with players or potential targets. He did that a lot with Wan-Bissaka last year. But the club definitely want to strengthen and they want to move players on as well. But there's also a lot of uncertainty. Every home game without fans costs Manchester United just over £4 million.
Can I ask you on that, Andy? Because there's some stories doing the rounds this morning, like on that number particularly, like Sean Engel in The Guardian is writing about the calls for the Premier League to bail out, or for Elite Sport and by association the Premier League to bail out those with sort of less pots. The Culture Secretary, Oliver Dowden, saying that he knows that clubs are going to come under pressure with no fans. And there is an idea now that sport, particularly at the lower levels, is facing something of an existential crisis. Martin Ziegler takes on the point in The Times where he says that Premier League clubs saying that they'll only help if there's a guarantee that fans can get back into stadiums. What is the appetite of a club like Manchester United or the others that operate at that level when they themselves obviously are having to maybe lay off or furlough staff as well? What is the appetite amongst those clubs to prop up the lower end of football?
United want fans back in the stadium. I wrote the story. Martin Ziegler's been right on top of fans coming back, but I wrote the story about 12,000 fans for the Palace game. That's what United were pushing for. Probably good that none of them ended up watching that Palace game. But the mood darkened around the COVID figures ahead of that, and it wasn't allowed. And I realised, you know, me saying United should be spending money, or my tweet at the weekend where I said, stop messing around, get the players in. And then you get clubs whose entire future is threatened. And I spoke to the chairman of Trafford yesterday. Is the closest league club, semi-pro club to Manchester United. And their average crowds are 300. They've got a good relationship with Man United. They're semi-pro. And their capacity has been limited to 400. And they actually had 400 last weekend because there's a huge demand to see live football. And then I spoke to the chairman yesterday and he said, we're now being told there's going to be another reduction and you've got to offer table service. I mean, the idea of putting tables around a football pitch, it's bizarre that you can't have 400 fans easily socially distanced around any football pitch, you know, be it in Bray or Manchester or Galway or whatever, and same for rugby or cricket. And there's a big financial issue here. Clubs below the Premier League are more reliant on fans coming through the turnstiles. It's a greater percentage of their income. There's huge concern. The National League, the fifth level, there was great reluctance from most of their clubs to even start the season next weekend without fans. That's where they get the money from. There can be streaming options as well. I think United have acted really well in the lockdown in terms of looking after their own staff. They didn't furlough staff. Engaging with the local community, they've been pretty fan-friendly as well. But they're also going to look at their own balance sheet. And I'm sure they could help out local clubs. And whether that's more of a redistribution of the television wealth, I don't know. The biggest problem for the Premier League clubs, if there's going to be huge cutbacks, is the salaries of their first team players, because they take up such a huge percentage of their overall revenue. So if everyone's taking cutbacks, okay. Does that also include the Glazers not taking a dividend from Manchester United's profits? Will it even be a profit this year? But clubs cannot go bust. Macclesfield Town went bust. Bury went bust last year. Greater Manchester's a hotbed of football. And in the last few years, Wigan fans are being shafted. Bolton fans were shafted. Bury, Macclesfield. This shouldn't be happening. These clubs have got their own constituents. They're well supported. Okay, some of them were badly run. Oldham Athletic fans have not been impressed by their ownership at all, but Manchester just shouldn't be about United and City. Football clubs play a huge part in their local community. They are physical assets in the middle of their community. Football is not just something that you watch on a screen. And if I go to Trafford games, I see older local people. They can't do with the hustle and bustle of going to Old Trafford or to City anymore. And they like to go there to socialise. They, you know, they don't want to be lonely. they want to go and have a pint and watch football. And then you bring into play mental health and what going to watch football does. So it's a very wide-ranging issue, and it looks pretty bleak. I mean, I do a fanzine where we sell to fans outside football matches. It's hitting us badly. We've had more of a shift towards postal and digital subscriptions, but I think this is affecting everybody in one shape or another.
Yeah, that's not done yet. Andy Mitten, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.